At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the EUC Digest Throwdown, a monthly recording with your favorite host of EUC Digest. In the Throwdown, we'll discuss and debate on the news of the past month in the EUC space. And I can guarantee you, we will be having fun as I'm among like-minded friends who have a strong opinion and aren't afraid of sharing their perspective. But before we dive into the first topic of today, let's introduce ourselves. So you know which face belongs to what voice, because we're not only recording a podcast, we've got our cameras on, so you can see how we respond and the fun we have. My name is Ingmar Verheij, and for this episode, I'm your host, trying to tame the rest of the EUC Digest crew. Guys, how are you guys doing? Just for the record, can you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, sure. What up? What up? Erik van Klaveren here. I'm your co-host for today's episode. So, what up next?
Sorry, I'm just trying to eat a cracker, right? My name is Jits.
Alphabetically, come on.
I am the one who's constantly eating during this podcast, right? So, welcome everyone. Next up.
Johan van Amersfoort. Until today, I had a perfect face for radio. I did some proper grooming and my hair is okay-ish, so...
You missed the memo as well, right?
Yeah, we got caps, right? So we could all wear those.
Yeah, that's awesome. For the next episode. So the barber is probably going to be closed for at least 4 additional weeks. So next episode, I'll definitely wear my cap.
Did anyone say bar? Yeah. All right, who's next?
Barber.
I just heard bar.
Hey, Johan, just as a side comment, if this is grooming your beard, man, I don't know how it would look like before grooming your beard. Jesus. So my name is Kees Bachman, and I'm ready to go for this episode of The Throwdown. Let's go.
Excellent. So now you've not only heard the sweet, sweet voices of the EUC Digest, if you're watching, you know our faces. If you see us at an event, a conference, or on the street, just say hi, even though... it might take another year or so, sadly, but let's not contemplate on the situation we're in today. Let us highlight our sponsor for this season, Liquidware.
Yeah, so yeah, before we are switching gears towards our first topic of today's show, let us highlight exactly our exclusive sponsor, Liquidware. The leader in innovative and adaptive workspace management solutions for desktop. So yeah, everyone agrees, right? So... their solutions cover all experts in workspace management, and they ensure a great user experience across your workspace, whether it's physical, virtual, or a desk, or any cloud solution. So go check it out, liquidware.com. And Liquidware, thank you for being our exclusive sponsor this season.
Yeah. Thank Hooray. You. Thank you for paying for the drinks, the bites we got here. So we are ready for our first topic of... this season and this episode. Guys, I'm keen on hearing your thoughts on the first topic. And those are around the changes within VMware's ELT or executive leader team. First, we heard Rajiv Ramaswamy. I'm trying to pronounce this right.
Maybe Case knows.
Okay. Yeah, Case can fill us in later.
Well, internally, we call him RR.
RR. Okay. So Rajiv Ramaswamy, previous CEO at VMware. Co-responsible for all VMware's product and services offering and a lot more. He moved to Nutanix as the new CEO, as you just heard, but also another change within VMware, Pat Gelsinger, the CEO, stepping down and leaving to Intel. So are these officers abandoning their ship? Are they leaving it in good shape? And obviously, hard to miss, VMware and Nutanix, there's a lawsuit coming up. Is it another playground dust-up? Now, luckily... among us, we have a VMware fanboy, groomed.
So,
and we have a mutant. Mutant. Case, how do I pronounce this? Mutant.
I think you're doing it properly. So it's a mutant. I'll go first.
Turtles? Oh, Erik wants to go first. Erik, what's happening at VMware?
I don't know, but are the mutants like the turtles?
Fuck. Yeah, we're all green, and we all wear a hard shell on our back.
Awesome.
Oh, we're green as well.
So is Veeam. So you're not kind of alone in that. It's let me start with kind of a perspective from my side on what's going on between Rajiv and VMware, because you kind of position it as a beef between VMware and Nutanix, which realistically it's not, right? Because if you look at the lawsuit, VMware is actually just suing Rajiv and not Nutanix for anything. So it's a kind of a employer-employee lawsuit, which leaves out the future employer. Now, so from my perspective and my personal perspective here is that this just means that we onboarded somebody who's valuable, right? If it's somebody that doesn't bring value to the organization, would VMware really take these steps and would they really start the lawsuit against Rajiv? I think it just means that Nutanix caught somebody that is able to kind of execute on the vision and make sure that that kind of steered the ship into safer havens. Like everybody on the market right now, it's just very there's a lot of changes, a lot of kind of adaption to the market, and we're still seeing the effect of COVID everywhere. So I guess onboarding somebody with experience for Nutanix is a kind of a great step, and I think that VMware will miss him in terms of execution and vision. But again, it's what we see in this kind of lawsuit. It's much more a company to person file than a company to company file.
Right.
Maybe
right.
Johan, you've got an opinion on that as well.
No, yeah. Let me start by saying that I think that Nutanix hired a great leader, and I met him once at the VMworld a couple of years ago. And besides that, I think he's a really nice person. He's directly achievable. He talks easy, and I think that makes him a great leader. I think it's quite logical that a lawsuit follows after the hire. He has knowledge, obviously, of VMware's internal roadmap on the vision of VMware. And would it be different if one of us would, be hired by a competitor in a similar role?
I think
you might have a similar result as well, it might not be a lawsuit. It might be something that binds you in your contract of not talking to the same customers or relations. Or so I think it's logical that this follows the hire. But then again, I think it's he's a great leader, and I also think that Nutanix is a great company that has evolved in the last couple of years in a different way. They're focusing on multi-cloud as well from different perspectives, and I think he truly fits in the role of being their new leader. So great hire, and I'm sorry to see him leave as well next to Pat Gelsinger.
Yeah, and by the way, what you said, I entirely agree. I mean, for one, I don't think that VMware could have done anything else. You got to send out a signal to the market. Obviously, he has knowledge.
That's it, right?
So it makes perfect sense. Also, great hire, obviously, and it's a loss for VMware, I think. And then again, these things happen. And wait, Derek. And I think the other big subject or change within VMware is Pat Gelsinger leaving. And initially, it was like so much shock him going to Intel, which was. I didn't really understand. Then reading into that, he actually has 20, 30 years of history at Intel. Obviously, Intel is under pressure.
What you can see here this is a tray of four unused 486 DX2 CPUs, and he was responsible for designing these CPUs.
Awesome.
Story goes there's an Easter egg on the CPUs when you are able to zoom in really, really, really deep.
And that's
on
why you bought the tray to find it.
No, there should be some kind of autograph of Pat Gelsinger on there. And that's. I honestly bought these to get them autographed by Pat. But that'll be a challenge.
Well, was that before or after the move?
That was before the move. I have them here for, half a year already, or maybe even longer. And I was hoping to participate in a physical VMworld again sometime anytime soon, where he would be as well, and get him signed these, but that's not going to happen anymore.
So, I mean, and these changes happen. I think this is part of reality in every situation, but especially this year. I think as of last year, everything was frozen after the pandemic hit the world. We didn't see a lot of changes within organization. Everyone was just hyper-focused on recovering in whatever way needed. I think early 2021, I see a lot of changes in the market. My biggest question or moving forward is, who's going to replace Pat Gelsinger? Is it going to be Sanjay Poonen? Because whenever there's a change in leadership, usually there's a change in direction. So depending on who they are hiring, is it from internal? Are they attracting someone from external? Sanjay obviously has a strong EUC focus. So what's it going to do for the direction of VMware? And I'm curious.
Well, Sanjay moved from leading the EUC business unit to COO about, I would say, 2 years ago. And he's familiar for his former EUC focus, but now totally focused on the COO role. I honestly don't know if they're going to hire either an external person or promote someone from the internal organization. Both could be possible. I'm in the current leadership team. I'm not really aware of someone who could fit his shoes.
To be honest, they're big shoes to fill, right? I mean, Pat Gelsinger is not just somebody that you can replace. And I guess, you know, compliments for Intel to getting him back on board. As far as I was reading into it, it seems like he wanted to be CEO of Intel for a long time. He was told, you know, it's not going to happen for now. And he went to VMware and made it to CEO. And now he's going back to Intel in that role. I think that's something that is admirable. I think it shows strength. It shows a decent level of career planning. And it shows
perseverance.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's an example to any of us admiring or aspiring a new role to look at it on a more holistic perspective and say, all right, if I'm not able to perceive this here, then let's look how I can achieve that and see if I can kind of go back at some point and kind of get that role anyway. I think, you know, from a very holistic perspective, I think it's admirable to see how he's approaching this and the way that that he achieved this.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good thing, right? Because moving from a hardware vendor back to a software vendor and going back to hardware, it's a different world. If you move like to the competition, Intel isn't that much of a competition to VMware.
Not to VMware, they're probably. Well,
go ahead. Maybe and Ingmar, you touched upon this point, right? So usually when they're in the leadership team and especially in the chief everything role, I need to wrap it up already? No, but usually there's also a change in direction, right, in the strategy of the company. And I think Pat Gelsinger, together with the executive leader team, they already set a very clear and good strategy. So maybe I don't know whether Johan is the right one to answer, but it's hard to guess, right? Especially if we don't know who's going to fill up this role. But do we expect big changes in strategy from VMware?
I don't think so. They made big acquisitions in the last 18 months. Carbon Black was acquired. Pivotal came back.
I think they did around 6 acquisitions last one or 2 years.
And insanely big acquisitions. So the vision is being produced by a massive office of the CTO, and CTO is leading that strategy. And you see that I don't see that changing, to be honest. Pat was involved with the bigger acquisitions, and AirWatch was the same thing. They acquired AirWatch for like $2 billion. Mm-hmm. It was seriously insane.
Who's going to spend $2 billion on a product? I think the biggest change will happen.
Imagine you being the one that signs that off, right? I'm going to spend $2 frickin' billion on.
Oh, yeah. We have some
more. I know a company who just did.
Yeah, and more.
Same thing. So, being the one that signs that, ah, dude.
Yeah, you're done. It's career goals. By the way, wrapping the VMware topic off, let's say Sean Bass for president. I'm rooting for Sean. It's not very likely, but still rooting for Sean.
But only in playback mode at 0.5 speed, yeah. Because otherwise you're just not able to keep up with
it. Those keynotes are way too long. Let's
information in so much short time.
That's excellent. I love him. So another big organization where there are, I'd say, massive changes. Microsoft, not so familiar for everyone, but Julia White, our corporate VP of Microsoft Azure Marketing, she left to SAP after 20 years. But probably more relevant for our audience is Brad Anderson. He has been at Microsoft for 17 years. He was a corporate VP for Commercial Management Experiences team. Great title, but I just know from WVD, Intune, and everything that's EUC related. He's leaving for Qualtrics, which is way different organization. And I think it's going to have a massive impact on Microsoft. And actually, reading on Twitter, it's not just Brad Anderson leaving. I also saw Scott Manchester moving inside Microsoft. At least he's moving away from WVD. So there's a lot of changes in that space as well.
Yeah, but like I said before, I think if you move from such a huge position and move to a competitive market in the same position, it would be harder than something totally different. Because you get a fresh view in a different
way. Well, and they're seeking satisfaction as well, right? I mean, doing the same trick for a different logo, what kind of satisfaction will provide it in the end of the day, right? So I totally get if you're doing one thing for so many years, going to do something completely different, or at least work in an organization with a completely different focus and solution. I get that, right? Especially on that level, just stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something completely different, challenge yourself again.
I remember one guy who told me, "Don't judge this book by its cover." I was on a dinner with him. No, it wasn't you, Johan.
Shakespeare.
I took him to an Argentine restaurant because he was eating no carbs at all.
Is that the same guy who said life is like a box of chocolates?
Yeah, no, that the guy could run really fast. This guy couldn't run that fast.
but it would be good to record the next podcast at an Argentinian steak, right?
Let's see.
And hopefully it does. But I think that's another topic. Just moving back to the Microsoft part where there is a... Oh, sorry, you're the host, Ingmar.
It's not just about Brad or someone leaving. It's more, what's this... Why are they moving Microsoft at this point in their development, right? Just like with the VMware, are they leaving Microsoft in a good shape? Mm-hmm. Do they feel like, okay, this is a good moment to leave Microsoft and, you know, leave it to someone else?
And let me ask you guys a question. So last few kind of months, maybe last year or so, we all had to cut down on travel. We've spent more time at home, spent more time with family. Could it be that for these folks as well, it's been a moment of reflection to kind of reevaluate what's important for them, what's important for their situation, and see if they can make a move that aligns them more to that situation? I know that, if we look at Nutanix leadership, Dheeraj, our founder and previously our CEO, he basically stepped down because he had the time to evaluate his life and kind of reposition himself for the next few years. And that's for him, it was a clear motivation to kind of step down and go do something else. Could it be that Brad Anderson and maybe a Pat Gelsinger have similar experience where cutting down on travel gave them the time to kind of reevaluate on what they think is important and kind of act on that as well?
Yeah, it's the same for Riley,
right?
Yeah, I think you're totally spot on this. At least that's what I'm getting from all these guys and all these messages they are sending out. So I think for all of us and everybody who used to work in the field and did a lot of commuting or living from airport to airport which I don't, luckily, had a time to reflect and really think, what is important to me? What does matter to me? And realign those focus points with what they're doing right now.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, if there's something that the corona pandemic caused, is everyone to, you know, take a step back and realize, okay, what is important to me, and what are my life goals. But also, I think it has been a huge opportunity. Like I just said, right? Initially they were just extremely busy, just trying to keep the lights on and. You know, switching gears between their organization, making sure that everyone survives. But everyone is at home, right? So everyone has, we know all this all. Everything we do is now asynchronous. We don't have to respond immediately. There's no one at the door that you have to answer face-to-face. You don't have to travel. So there's an opportunity to meet with other board of directors. There's an opportunity to meet investors. So you can just spend an hour a day easily just having conversations with other leaders. So I think it's also that there's just a bigger opportunity now to have a conversation with other C-level people or whatever level you are. But I think now is the opportunity to have a look at what's available in the market. I'm not saying everyone should look around, but now, like, hey, where is there another job for me? But if you do,
I can see Johan is already checking out LinkedIn and. Yeah. Seeking job opportunities, right? You're a little bit distracted now.
Johan, we can have a talk. I'd like to have you met.
No, by the look on those faces of Johan and Case, I mean, are you applying?
All right. Then. No, he wouldn't make the cut anyway. It's the beard, man.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, let's wrap up the topic of fealty changes, people moving. Then, Johan, you just mentioned someone signing off $2 billion for an acquisition. It's very huge coincidence, I guess. Citrix just signed off for $2.25 billion, announcing that they are planning to acquire Wrike, and Wrike is a SaaS project management platform. Interestingly, Vista Equity Partners, that's one of those investment partners, they bought it 2 years ago. I think it's for $600 million or $800 million. I'm not sure, but it's quite a growth. What do you think on that? What do you think on the acquisition of Citrix?
Let me ask just one question, and you probably know the answer to this, Ingmar. What is the TAM for a product like Wrike? TAM, total addressable market.
Yeah. So I think the TAM and SAM both are somewhere in the Excel files that I have running here. But one, I don't have them right here. And two, I don't think I'm allowed to share them with you. I can tell you this. numbers. I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you that I have been, as you do, I do market research within Citrix. I have been investigating this market even before we were about to acquire Wrike. And it was a growing market before the pandemic. Even before the pandemic, Gartner, obviously, they have the new work nucleus. We call this Het Nieuwe Werken. But Gartner just came with this like last year, like, hey, we're all going to, you know, work more remote and more flexible timing, and something we've always been doing, in at least in our nation. New work nucleus. And one of their cornerstones in this is not just like collaboration tools like Teams and Slack, but it was a specific mention of collaborative work management, because if you have more distributed teams, you have more people working in separate areas, and you have more, you know, there is not such a fixed way of working with your teams. Then you need a way to do structured management of what you're doing, your projects, your work, your tasks. You've seen a peak in Trello, in the use of Kanban boards. You'll get that here as well. And now with the pandemic, it's a massive
increase. Ladies and gentlemen, This is corporate Ingmar talking right now.
This is not
Ingmar. It's a cheat ride. When I first read up on what Wrike was doing, the first thing that came to mind, but we already have Podio, and Podio pretty much does the same thing, in my opinion.
Would you mind if I?
Yes.
Yeah. So here's my take, right? If Citrix is really pushing the workspace with intelligence, what else would they do than buy something that can enable workflows in a more elegant SaaS-based way. I think it's a absolute brilliant move to buy a product or a company that has a product suite that could align perfectly with that workspace with intelligence. Is that the right phrasing, Imar? Workspace with intelligence?
No. The people at
Brand doing it wrong again.
Let me tell the case. The people at Brand told me, please do not use Citrix Workspace with intelligence. So I will refrain from it, but please go ahead if you want to. But I am
2 minutes of my life I never get back.
Yes,
he's explaining what Reich does.
No. I mean, as for your opinion, I'm not going to pitch it to you. Look, I'm excited. Honestly, I mean, they are a leader in the Forrester wave. Gartner doesn't have a magic quadrant. So I think my perspective is we want a leader. This is a growing market. So the TAM is growing. The SAM is excellent for us as well. So, but that doesn't, I mean, hey, I am invested in this technology. I am super excited about just the technology, even before we acquired this. But I want to know what your opinion is. Johan, you are a VMware fanboy. Sometimes VMware don't go hand in hand. We seem to be overlapping on vision, and then we do copy paste. What's your opinion?
Or vice versa.
Well, interestingly, the question Eric asked was what's the difference in use cases when comparing Podio to Reich, and I think at the end, everything is about getting the best employee experience possible.
But I had some thoughts as well, right, on Podio and now with Reich. So to me, and bear with me, I didn't do any in-depth analysis. I know it's Ingmar's job to do so. I'm not sure whether you already covered this, but no. But I think Podio is an excellent framework where you would be able to build something to manage a geographically dispersed team with all the varieties that comes with that. And I think with Reich, it's more ready to be used software as a service solution that you can start using right on, right? I mean, it's purposely built for that. So I think that's more or less complements each other, maybe. I don't know. I do not even know about the adoption of Podio in the current portfolio.
So let me ask a different question. So where in the, let's say the value for the end user, will Reich versus Podio stand out?
Yeah, I think you draw the comparison of Podio and Reich, and I think that's a fair comparison because Podio does offer work management capabilities. However, I think it's one of the comparison videos I watched from a guy from Eastern Europe. He mentioned Podio as it's like Lego. It's very modular, but you have to build it, right? So before you get a lot of value out of it, you have to know what to do. So yes, it can be powerful, but not for the majority of customers. So what I've seen with Podio is there's a huge developer ecosystem. We see a lot of things being built on it. Actually, a lot of companies making a shitload of money on Podio, probably more than Citrix does. But for work management, as we named here, for the end user, the value is the reason we've been using Trello is it's just easy to use. You get a credit card, you get an account, and it works. Same goes for Reich. It's more not mature, but it's easier to use for those specific use cases. And the same you see with an Asana, a Monday.com. These all are the leaders in this space. It's just so super easy to use. So that even when you're not technical, and that's the audience, and this is super useful. And it's not for
it more or less offers a commoditized experience.
Yeah, it's simpler to use. And by the way, Podio is not gone. It won't be. I mean, I think yesterday they published a post that Podio will be used for other purposes, native system of record within Citrix Workspace, some other work capabilities. So there's a lot of stuff happening, but it's early day, right? The announcement was made this week. I think they said like the coming 3 or 4 months, it first has to be finalized, right? There's a lot of legal and other stuff happening. But I think to me, this is an EUC call, right? And I've been dying to get something on this call other than just freaking VDI and DAS, which I think is just boring.
There is this list of Citrix acquisitions, right? So Reich is number 52 on that list. So, and I see some, successful acquisitions and less successful acquisitions. So I don't want to go into the predictions, right? But yeah. I'm curious where we'll end up.
I think a lot of IP is extracted from there.
Yeah, I think a lot of learnings from you learn from.
Yeah.
Moving on, because otherwise I might get in trouble here. Thank you. Another.
No. But there were. I'm even looking at this. Sorry, you wanted to move on, Rod, but professional you can talk services. About it.
Symbolic?
No, the Ardens acquisition.
Ardens.
No. I'm not talking about Symbolic towards Melio, right? I was talking about 2007, the Ardens, right?
Excellent.
I was really happy with that acquisition, right?
Netscaler.
I don't know from a revenue perspective, but it's great technology, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well.
Made people rich, right?
There you go.
The hypervisor business is always a good one. So, buying SenServer for $500 million has been a great investment overall.
I'll just keep it at
$2.7 billion.
I mean, if VDI is going,
there are times that isn't in my bank account.
Framework, also a great acquisition, great technology.
Mm, yeah. So moving on.
Talking about user experience.
I think Ingmar wants to move on. So yeah, let's just.
I mean, I actually like a lot.
You want to talk about a different acquisition of $40 billion?
No, 27.2. Guys, there. I mean, if you talk about massive acquisition, 27.2. This time times 10x, right? Or actually slightly more. And I first reading into this, just seeing the headline, Salesforce acquires Slack. I did not see how this computes. Why would Salesforce, which I know as a CRM, I know they do low-code app development. Why would they acquire Slack for just somewhat significant amount? But okay, they acquired Slack they already acquired Tableau, which is a Microsoft Power BI alternative. Let's say it's an alternative. MuleSoft, which is an iPaaS and kind of competes with Power Automate. And they already compete with Microsoft Dynamics, they compete with Microsoft Power Apps. So why is Salesforce making this just massive acquisition, and what's this going to mean for Slack, probably? What are your thoughts? Because I have a shitload of them, but again.
Well, Slack offers a wide ecosystem of automation solutions. Weirdly enough, I use Slack in my own environment and sometimes a customer environment as a messaging broker. And from that point of view, I think Slack could offer a wide variety of automation solutions for Salesforce, which is really good. I think the other thing is that Salesforce has a benefit of increasing their market share. And if you look at the wide variety or the wide number or the big number of Slack users, which are basically added to Salesforce's market share, that's insane. And I
think that Salesforce can learn from behavior of Slack users as well, right? I think one of the drivers of something like this could be, how are my users interacting with each other? How can we kind of level that to make our services even better? It's not just about integration. It's also about what's user behavior. How are they looking at data? How are they consuming data? How are they sharing data? And Slack, for me, not sure about you guys, is a lot about collaboration and making sure that everybody has the data that to kind of make educated guesses and kind of help our customers better. So I see a opportunity for Salesforce there as well. And let me just close that off with, for me, is that I'm just happy that they didn't go to Oracle, because
I heard. I want to say the exact same. Oracle's famous for letting stuff die after acquisition.
No, but actually, it also makes sense, right? If you're like take Salesforce as a CRM application, communication is crucial, right? So communication with your partners, with your customers, so building that into your platform, making it more easy, less hurdles, less hoops to jump through. That makes sense, right? You want to be able to connect people to each other. So why not use Slack for that?
Bingo. So I think you hit the nail on the head. So obviously Salesforce, I've been using it. I know Eric has to use it as he's a sales engineer. Salesforce Chatter, ever tried using it? That's just total crap. Salesforce Chatter has failed miserably. I think last year Salesforce introduced Salesforce 360, which is focus towards people doing sales or customer relation management. Basically, it's, hey, here's my customer. I see all the data of this specific customer. So that worked-ish, but there's a lot of gaps. I think it's you're totally right. This allows them to connect the dots. So if you are collaborating with your partner, with your customer, this just draws them all in. Slack last year introduced, I think it's Slack Connect or something. So you can have not just teams and channels within your organization, but also cross boundaries. You can collaborate with organizations outside of your own. That kind of makes sense. Last year, Stuart Butterfield, he's a CEO and co-founder. Got to watch some videos. This guy is charismatic. He shared his vision that he wants to increase integrations so users never have to leave the collaboration platform to get work done. So what I like about that, I like Slack. I use it a lot more than on a daily basis, is Slack is a best of breed vendor here, and so is Salesforce. And they're now playing the best of breed. They're basically keeping it alive, because otherwise Slack, like you said, might have got acquired by an Oracle or someone else. Slack is struggling with Teams. We all know that. This way they
still exist. Yeah, honestly, I'd rather use a combination of Slack and Zoom all day long instead of using Teams. Dude, yep. Teams is just...
it's a major resource eater.
No, well, I mean, yeah, but it's a wrongly evolved MSN Messenger. That's what it is.
it's not very intuitive, right? You're each and every time you're struggling, and I'm always thinking it's me.
What about Microsoft Chat?
There's Comic Chat. There's Teams, and these are
two roads colliding.
Oh, dude.
I think for those who are just tuning, right? Well, we try to record this podcast via Teams, but fail desperately, right?
You're entirely right. I think to me, Microsoft 365 is a very tightly integrated solution, right? Everything is very tightly integrated, but that's also the downside. It is so tightly integrated and coupled. If you go to Microsoft 365, there's no Office 365 anymore. It's just like all in. Then it is an all in, right? Oh, here's Teams. Hey, here's OneDrive. Hey, here's SharePoint. Hey, everything comes together. And that can be great. But for those customers who choose not to go all in, that you have choice. You can choose your collaboration vendor or working collaboration with Slack. You can choose Content Collab from, for instance, Box. So we know that Slack, Box, Okta, Zoom, PagerDuty, these guys are basically they're best buddies. They support each other through thick and thin. So I think this is great. And by the way, the combination with Salesforce to me makes perfect sense. And also I think this is a huge opportunity for vendors like Citrix, VMware, that's basically it, become a part of that best of breed stack. Like, hey, if you want to have an alternative to like all in Microsoft, which by the way, just got accused of not just with the employee experience monitoring or productivity score, kind of backfired. Let's apologize for that. And then, by the way, we collect all your data log files, so there's a privacy concern with Microsoft 365. I think this is an excellent alternative for customers who say, like, maybe I want to pick and choose. Maybe I want to have a...
Yeah, but right. Many of those decisions on what kind of tools to use is just financially driven, right? I mean, many organizations that I talk to are pivoting towards Teams just because they already paid for it, right? They don't get a separate bill, which they do use or do get from other collaboration tools, right? So, and it's the same. We at NVIDIA, we use different solutions. We have a huge Slack ecosystem, or I don't know how to pronounce it, but then again, we also get a big bill from Slack each and every month. Well, we have more or less the same functionality in other applications, right? But they got less adopted because of the obvious reasons.
So let me tell you, I mean, yes, I agree, but the biggest downside of this is, yes, there's a push for, hey, we got a consumer services, and that's actually what they try to do with productivity score. They changed it a bit, so you can measure adoption, you can motivate your customer, your employees to use more of those products. The more services you are entitled to use, the more shelfware you have. Hey, I saw a comparison from our pricing and packaging team, which I find striking. And weird example, McDonald's. here's a super menu, right? I got a Coke, I got a burger, and a fry. $5, great value. Now I'm giving you a Coke, a coffee, a burger, and fries. So I'm getting the coffee in advance. $5. Fuck no, I'm not going to pay $5. I don't want a coffee. I'm going to pay $4. So the more you add into one of those products, like Microsoft 365, that also leads up to the discussion like, yeah, but I don't need all those bells and whistles. So at some point, there's just too much.
Well, and that's one. But the more products you stick in those $5, the lower the quality of the products will be. And that leads to a bad user experience, honestly.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. I mean, then we're going to talk about COGS and like a cost of goods and all that stuff and how you can pay for it, the development.
You want to talk about what, Ingmar?
I talked also about Salesforce and Slack.
Yes. Oh, sorry. You're now talking about Microsoft. Yeah. Let's move back to Salesforce. Anyone want to say something about Slack?
I love Slack, and I'll
27.2 billion.
Oh, dude, that's a lot of three crap loads of money.
Yeah, there are times I don't have this laying around somewhere.
All right, so
yeah, you mentioned it twice already. I'm starting to believe you.
So, Eric, if you done the pre-read, you would have known that the segue I was making from Slack into Microsoft was actually in
the paper
I sent you. That you know, last time we did a recording, I think it was the wrap up of 2020. Weird year. Yeah.
So you're gonna talk about WVD. I'm gonna grab a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yuan
said recording.
Although it's gonna be entertaining, right?
Let's give this stage separately from the recap, because Johan pretty much got an opinion on this.
Johan,
if case has one, Yitz as well as you. So as a fifth one in this episode, I think we can make this much longer. We should dedicate one episode on this. But as you already brought this up, let's just start, because Johan hinted this in a previous recording.
Yeah, so the thing...
Yeah. And he has his knife ready.
Excellent. Johan said...
Yeah, I saw his knife.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Johan, enjoy your sausage. Johan, in the previous recording said, is Microsoft screwing us over with WVD? And by the way, I added, what about Microsoft Teams? And I just alluded to this, that everything is very tightly integrated with Microsoft Teams. Also the Power Stack, which is converging more and more, which putting pressure on customers. So this month, they actually introduced a Process Advisor, which is a process mining, process discovery tool. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on customers who are using the likes of Celonis and others, because it's part of your offering. So again, that's putting more value, I guess, to your product. And then I had to pull back productivity score, to being by ZDNet, accused of being the next a great spyware. So what I wonder is, what does this mean? And is this indeed, as you said, Johan, are they screwing over us, the market? And what do you mean by that?
Right. So screwing over is a nuance, obviously. And let's separate Teams and WVD, right? So let's talk about Teams first. I think what Microsoft did was really, really clever. They gave away Teams, or almost gave it away, in time of the pandemic. And as a result, everyone was able to, or kind of able to work from home, right? And with kind of, I mean that having basic functionality in Teams, and that's what I'm seeing still at customers at this stage, is they kind of configured it. They kind of, and I mean kind of, so they kind of configured it, they installed it, configured it, take it as a service, and now they are also kind of using it. But in order for an organization or an enterprise to fully utilize the power of Teams, because it does have a really great use case, but you need a lot of, honestly, you need a lot of consultancy to make it work, because on average, customers don't have the knowledge of a platform like this. It was with the SharePoint, it was for a long time the same thing. If you want to have the true power of SharePoint, you need to hire consultants and companies to make it work, or Microsoft.
And consultancy companies loved it.
Yeah, well, and this is why I think that So the spending of organizations, the investment changed from being OPEX driven towards CAPEX because they need to hire people to design and to deploy teams to make it really work. Teams in general has a couple of challenges. One being that everyone now wants to use Teams, but what Citrix and VMware do really good is offer a centralized workspace, like a digital workspace platform in which you can aggregate applications, services, and now people want to integrate Teams into those platforms. And for us as a consultancy firm, we have a lot of work because of that. But I honestly don't like the fact that Microsoft is pushing a solution like this. And companies have to invest in a lot of consultancy to integrate this in their digital workspace. And this is where I think companies like Slack, who do it totally different, and they, sure, you know, they have a specific feature of what Teams offers in general, but still, Slack is, if you are an IT team and you want to configure Slack and use all of the features in Slack, it's pretty easy to do so. And this is definitely not the case with Teams.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, and it's the same thing with WVD. If you want to use WVD, sure, it's a great use case. But now you have a virtual desktop and you need applications on it. You need a profile management solution on it. And to be honest, I don't like the connection protocol. So on top of it, you need to use either a Citrix add-on, a VMware add-on, or Frame, which is part of Nutanix, in order to get the best user experience possible. And billing is a challenge. Provisioning takes a bit of time. There's so much downsides to WVD. The only upside I can see at this moment is that Microsoft fully acknowledges the fact that VDI or DAS or is a thing. So their operating system is being tweaked and tuned and changed into something that can be leveraged on-prem as well, if they will support that. And this is the only upside I see currently to WVD.
Right. And let me add to that real quickly. As my team does a lot of performance benchmarking, we actually saw this in full effect, right? So we do performance benchmarking with basically every Windows 10 version that comes out. And what we've seen, and I'm not joking here, is around the time that WVD was announced publicly, we saw that, like, in the next following 3 to 6 months, we saw every iteration of Windows with current updates was actually getting better density than before. Hmm. So I've got an unproven thesis here that Microsoft realized how much density they'd lose with upgrading their Windows operating system to a newer build, that they went like, oh shit, we need to fix this. And they actually made that fix available for public as well. And again, it's an unproven thesis, but that's basically what we've seen. Ever since Microsoft released WVD, we actually see that if you update to the latest version of Windows 10, of whatever build you have, you actually see better density and better user experience.
Cool. So that, at least that's...
And what we used to do for a really long time is if you take... like Citrix was doing this for over 20 years. I started my career in 99 being a WinFrame engineer. And I remember from the day on, you know, when you had, different versions, MetaFrame, stuff like that, that you need to embed different tools like RES, PowerFuse at a certain moment in time to let VDI suck less, a famous expression.
Decertifying. Benny Cheech.
Yeah. Or Benny. And what you're seeing now is that Microsoft is actually acknowledging that that VDI is a thing. And Avis Logic, the acquisition of Avis Logic is a perfect proof of that. So they are, you know, going away from roaming profiles, which was developed by the devil. And they are now fully embracing something. Yeah, well, it's true. I never heard a story of like a positive story
I think this is a really great challenge for us to find somebody with a positive story about roaming.
Wait. What's their different solution? I always use the kick script.
There you go. I mean, to your point, John.
Am I lagging behind, or
did Microsoft screw us over? I think I don't think they screwed us over. This just strategy played out very well by Satya Nadella, and he's doing excellent with whether that's W4D or Teams. They're providing a good enough solution, and it's perceived as free. And I think the perception is great. I think you're 100% right that I just saw some cost calculators on W4D. It's not free. It's actually paying more than if you would go to VMware, to Citrix, or to whatever, or Frame. You're paying more. But hey, if you want to believe you're cheaper, go ahead. You know, whatever.
I think to finalize it, I think Teams and WVD is basically like the rabbit hole, and you get further and further in the rabbit hole, and you are unable to get out of it. Because at the end, yeah, well, dude, if Microsoft is giving away Teams for free at this moment, you're not gonna. It's the perfect marketing strategy. Companies are not moving away from Teams anymore.
It's kind of like drug dealers, right? The first one's on the house.
Yeah,
one will also be on the house, but when you are addicted, you have to pay for it.
Now your true nature comes, Eric. Guys,
I know.
Have you seen The Social Dilemma?
Yes.
So
Yeah, you referred to that last time as well, and also in regards to Teams, right?
Exactly. So their whole essence is, hey, I'm going to learn everything about you, as we see in productivity score and all the data that they gather, something with privacy, and I'm going to build as much services inside this product so you don't have to leave. Just stay here. Obviously, offer it for free at first. So there's a parallel, which doesn't mean I'm against Teams. I started using it. I'm starting to like it. Actually, the video calls that I had with Teams, they're excellent. I did not have a dropout. I actually like they are rapidly innovating. And the good thing about competition, as Microsoft is doing, is that it's pushing the competition as well. So I see Slack innovating. I see Zoom innovating. Everyone is innovating because they have to keep up with the pace of Microsoft, which is massive. They're just super fast in developing. So do I like Teams as the end goal? No. But however, if a customer decides to go with Teams, then let's meet the user where they are. And I think that's something we have to acknowledge. I think, yes, it's kind of putting a burden on all of us. Yesterday, I saw Igel releasing a thin client based on Raspberry Pi. Excellent. But where's the Microsoft Teams optimization?
And that's what exactly you're hitting the nail on the head. This is they're steering the ecosystem as well, right? So they invent something, and the ecosystem around it,
needs to adapt.
They need to adapt, and they could either thrive over it or it gets them in a corner where they are unable to leave from. So,
up to the moment that, someone emerges and, there's a disruptor. So there's one more topic that I want to cover today, and then I think we need to wrap it up, which I got from my beautiful paper here. I saw VMware join.
Wine?
Say again? Wine?
Is it wine? Is it about Alamos Chardonnay from Argentina?
Please, can you do a brief review of the Chardonnay?
This one.
Yeah, what's your take on that?
Yeah, we could make that like a regular item on the show.
Like a book club, man with wine.
Right. How is your beverage?
It is being sponsored by, I think, Erik van Klaveren. It's Alamos, the Chardonnay from the Mendoza, Argentina area. It's a 2020 Chardonnay. And I'll honestly give it a 6.5.
On what scale?
Yeah,
0 to 10. It is a dry wine, but it kind of, it's really fruity, really citrusy, and I must say that it kind of tastes like more like a Sauvignon Blanc.
I might like it because
on the positive side, it has space to grow.
Sauvignon Blanc is
the wine. I like Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, I hate Chardonnays. Chardonnay.
Yeah, but 6.5 isn't that good
for Chardonnay.
It's not that bad either.
Yeah.
Well,
meh.
Where's
okay, your so you we drop off?
Eric, where's your Chardonnay? Where's yours?
My Chardonnay.
Yeah. Hey, Johan, could you please tell our audience that is actually that are like the part that is actually watching the YouTube stream why you have those small wine glasses?
Yeah. So I this is my version of dry January. Okay. So I have tiny glasses.
Cutting and, down.
It's a I don't know. It's a psychological thing.
There you go. Yeah.
I think we have a commercial in the Netherlands where you can lose weight and just make the plates much smaller. So it looks like that's you have more in your plate.
That's an actual thing. So there's a course or a company called Omdenken, Rethink. And they invented a couple of these things, like have a cafeteria at your company, let them offer smaller plates than, but completely fill them like you would fill the bigger plates. And at the end, people are having less food and thus will be less.
Yeah, I tried this at home, right? But the small plates we only used for serving cake, so it didn't really work for me.
So now you use the
now I get some hints on where I get it wrong.
But maybe for next, okay. So for next episode, Eric, Chardonnay might not resonate really well. By the way,
no, but this is good feedback because I will steer on this and send my wife out to look for a better wine or beer.
Eric, if you can
maybe one of the listeners has a recommendation on some great
bread. We can make that a topic on the throwdown episode as well.
So my next question would have been, what's the topic you want to discuss next episode? But let's go for the wine. I prefer a Verdejo or something, like a Moor or Pinot Grigio. I like that.
You have to send it down because I won't remember next time.
No worries. We're recording.
Ah, okay.
Right.
So anyone else? I mean, to me, this is I am doing.
No, I'm picturing Eric going to his local supplier with a recording.
you choose, like, hey, this is the one we have. I'm doing dry January. Yeah. Fun fact is, I told them guys like I don't drink this month. I don't know why, but I figured with COVID, let's do it. And you know what Eric said? Like, no worries. I know it's dry January, but there's a dry sausage.
Exactly.
But okay, enjoy. Moving back to switching gears.
Also, just
prefer
drinking topics. Wine,
which is more a liquid ware. And I think we need to wrap it up with that, as they are being our main sponsor for this time. So I want to wrap up the first episode of the EUC Digest Throwdown. I think we all had a lot of fun recording this episode. I know I had. And we sincerely hope that you've enjoyed listening on our thoughts, ramblings, this news month. Monthly news. If you have anything that you want to add here or just want to say, stay in touch, reach out to us on the social channels or by email on podcast@eucdigest.com. Cheers and see you next month at the next Throwdown.